Now,
just so everyone can hear, the rules basically are that do please ask questions, but try to avoid making long statements as part of your question. Now, that is a do as I say, not as I do, because I'm going to start off with a very short statement. I can't resist making it. I was recently involved in some research on the increasing dependence of community organizations in Alberta on funding from gambling sources. And one of the things that came up in the interviews with people I had in southern Alberta involving community organizations over and over and over again are exactly the same kinds of issues that Ron and Wendy have raised today, namely donor exhaustion, the amount of work that's involved in funding applications because of all the new accountability rules, the fact that money is for specific projects rather than for the basic work of the organization that needs to get done, and paying for good people to do that work, funding double binds, I also see this, by the way, at the university as well. I teach at the university. I know a number of people have told me that, well, you know what? I'm not going to apply for research funding from this particular source or that source anymore because it's too much work to do the application and there's very little guarantee I'll get anything out of it anyway. And that's especially the case for researchers who are outside the shiny fields of technology and medicine. So this is, we're talking about a national issue on a number of fronts here. And I think that one of the things that might be worth discussing in the next half an hour is not just the possibility of new funding, but a new philosophy of funding. What I'd like to do, actually, is to send a bunch of politicians to work in a meatpacking plant and to learn a little bit more about when you're cutting fat and when you're actually cutting bone. So I'll call up Ron and Wendy now, and we'll have some question and answers. So I would invite anyone who likes to, if you can shout your question from the floor, great. No? Microphone? Okay, let's do it from the microphone.
You can see a lot of advantages for putting several cultural pieces of the community together under one roof so it can feed off each other, like an art gallery and a museum and maybe one or two other items. And I'm wondering, has any thought been given to that? And is that a funding issue, or are there ways that they might enhance each other?
I think part of it lies in how each municipality structures its arts and culture community. Medicine Hat has done a superb job under Carol Beattie in organizing the arts and culture community for a number of years, and that's where the Esplanade, which incorporates a 750-seat theater, the art gallery, the theater, and studio space for a number of these organizations, has fallen under. In Lethbridge, we've had a very strong arts community, as many of us are aware. But until very recently, there's been no real cultural policy, and there's been certainly no direct leadership of that arts community, aside from perhaps the Allied Arts Association, which a number of us, including the Galton members. But certainly splitting the Allied Arts Council away from the Bowman Arts Center, I think, is a very positive move. We're kind of behind Medicine Hat and a number of organizations by several years in terms of our cultural policy development. And certainly there is no heritage policy that has yet hit the floor for this municipality as well. In terms of feeding off one another, I think I'll refer to the Medicine Hat example, and that is that while there's perhaps some economic benefit to, you know, sharing one large space, you don't have to duplicate efforts, it does come down to turf wars. And one of the major issues that's happening at the Esplanade right now is around who gets to book what, who's got priority, who's going to pay for this, because each one of those arts organizations that are booking those spaces are still responsible for paying some of those costs. So it becomes rather disjointed, even in its best experiment. And the Esplanade is probably one of the best examples that I've seen of that. In terms of our community, if you're looking for perhaps that direction, I think that we need several, if we're looking at incorporating a number of agencies under one roof, I think that one of the things that would be very timely, but it's going to take some time at the same time, is to continue the work of the Allied Arts Association in building those groups to have that cohesive vision, and I don't think we're there yet. Is there a need for some of these facilities in our community, like a new performing arts center? SAG is operating under very old systems, much like the Gulf had been. We were dealing with large boilers, the size that were occupying the size of this room. And the boilers that we now have with the Gulf occupy the women's washroom here. So in terms of efficiencies, there's new efficiency that you can get through new building. But I think we need some more work done at the community level before a facility like that can happen.
Just a further comment to that. This is something that our Heart of the City, the Heart of Our City program is looking at. So if you'd like to get more information about that, you can go to the city for that. And the other thing that we are doing already and have for a long time is we're not in the same building, but we're in the same headspace. And we do share resources through our collegial relationships with those other organizations.
First of all, is in terms of buildings, historic buildings that we obtain. And one of the things that we really realized with the historic 1910 Galt building was that in terms of the efficiency of that building and the historic nature of the building, for it to become a museum building was something that we really couldn't do. And I'll give you the advice of Robert Hirano, who is a very well-respected architect nationally, advising on issues of historic architecture. The Galt building itself is a frame structure with a brick exterior. And for us to be able to use that facility as a museum facility, maintaining it at a 40% humidity and between 40 and 45, and the temperature range of about 18 to 20 degrees Celsius, would have very quickly in the next 40 years have deteriorated the building beyond repair. We would have lost the entire brick facade of the Galt building. And so for us, it was important to be able to maintain that, and it was important for our architect, Kevin Nyhoff, who is from Lethbridge. Many of you know Kev, the Nyhoff family, who run Nyhoff Construction. Kevin was the architect on that. And we consulted with Robert, and he said, Ron, he said, if you do anything with that building, museum-wide, and pumping out that, you're going to lose the building. So if people are wondering why we didn't use the Galt, and in the facility itself, why we have not used some of the classroom spaces for exhibition space, that's the primary reason why we wanted to do that. It was because we were preserving the historic building. In terms of parking and in terms of visitor access, one of the challenges that we have, like every other museum, is around funding. And when we were operating with the old hospital doors as the main entrance into the facility, you may have noticed tucked away in a little alcove was our 200 square foot gift shop. We, as a tax-based organization, are responsible now for raising over $100,000+ a year in self-generated revenues. And our little gift shop of 200 square feet would not be able to support that. And what we were also finding is that with 53,000 visitors a year coming into the facility, that foyer entrance was really inadequate to be able to receive school groups or groups of 50 or more. And if any of you have been in the Galt when you're trying to get a bus tour into the facility, it was virtually impossible. So the shift from the old front doors, as we now refer them, the historic front doors, to the new facility, was to be able to accommodate the visitor traffic that we were getting. And we were a victim of our own success. It's good that we have 53,000 visitors or more a year to the museum, but we couldn't accommodate them in the space that we were, or accommodate our exhibitions. So what we did, and yes, Jane is right in the sense that the plaque that is sitting there was laid in 1910 as part of the historic structure. And the architects were very aware of some of the components of the Geneva Convention, in which states that you leave the building in the state or in the function that it was in. So for us to either have replicated the new addition in the style of the old Galt Hospital wouldn't have been feasible, and it violates the Geneva Convention. To tear away that plaque and put it at front in our new front doors, where we needed to have visitors have a larger gathering space, wasn't possible. So we left it where it is. And one of the things that perhaps Jane hasn't seen with us is a plan that really does down through the museum, and visitors do circulate through the entire facility, is a plan that Wendy is currently working on that recognizes both the Galt family and the Galt Hospital as an important part of our community. And those plans that will be implemented in 2008. However, like everything else that we do, it all depends on project funding. So if you'd like to contribute some seed money towards that, that would be helpful. And so in terms of the building, I think one of the things where we're developing the Galt is that we are very aware that we got the Galt after several different renovations. And protecting buildings isn't necessarily restoring them in the interior, but adaptive reuse. And restoration would have cost us in the millions to have restored the interior of the old Galt Hospital. And if any of you have ever been in some of the historic hospitals, you know. So how many of you were born in the Galt Hospital? A few. You may have remembered that those rooms were really tiny, and when you're trying to deal with the class of